And now a look at local and statewide news. Kodiak Chamber of Commerce is rallying the community around the KFC Taco Bell after owner Debbie Rohrer announced last week that the restaurant will be closing.
Naturally, when we heard that KFC Taco Bell was closing their doors, and it was not by the choice of the owners, we wanted to help in any way that we could.
That's Sarah Phillips, Executive Director of the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber is putting out a call for letters from the community in support of KFC Taco Bell. They're planning to send the letters to KFC and Taco Bell's parent corporation, Yum Brands. The restaurant has long been a sponsor of many community events, including arts performances, local sports, and high school activities.
They donate so many things to so many people within this community. So if you've been touched by them, we'd love to have a letter so that we can send this all the way up to the Yum Brand Board of Directors, and maybe we can get them to listen.
In Rohrer's Facebook post last week, she said the restaurant would stay open for as long as it has supplies, which she expected to be about 2 weeks. Phillips says that means they need to act quickly on their letter writing campaign. The deadline for submitting letters to the chamber is this Monday, February 10th.
We're going to try and appeal as quickly as we can so that we can get their doors back open as quickly as possible.
The reasons for KFC Taco Bell's closure remain unclear. Rohrer declined to provide any information due to, quote, potential future legal action. The store employs 18 people, most of whom work there part-time, according to Rohrer. Debbie's brother Dan opened the KFC Taco Bell in August 2008. It is the only Yum Brands combination store of its kind to have opened in Alaska. After this store closes, Alaska's only KFCs and Taco Bells will be in the Anchorage and Fairbanks areas. You can reach the Chamber at 907-486-5557 or email chamberdirector@kodiak.org. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will have a regular meeting tonight, and a group of local residents concerned about bears in residential areas plans to show up in force to testify to the need for borough intervention and action to keep bears and people safe. KMXT's Maggie Wall reports.
The recent killing of three bears in Kodiak residential areas has prompted a number of local residents to ask the Borough Assembly to step up to help the community be more bear aware. First off, organizer Bill Tucker says there is no bear problem. What Kodiak has, he says, is a people problem, which is causing bears to habituate to visiting residential areas, because a small percentage of locals don't keep their garbage under control and don't lock dumpsters. The plan, says Tucker, is for people who care about bears to attend or call in to tonight's meeting with their suggestions and their concerns about the local bear situation.
So we want to try to figure out what we can do to help or guide the Borough Assembly or tell them our thoughts or whatever about how we think we could resolve this and what some of the issues might be. And so we've talked about it in small groups and got it out on BearAware, and we've been on the news in Channel 11 once statewide. So we're just trying to get the Assembly to listen to the community and so that they know how the community feels when they move forward with some of these issues.
As the retired head of the borough's Engineering and Public Facilities Department, where he dealt with bears at the landfill, Tucker got a thorough education on bear behavior near garbage. Tucker was our guest on this week's Talk of the Rock program, where he discussed concerns about bear issues and what he and his group are calling bear aware. He says Kodiak residents are very much interested in protecting both the bears and the people who live with them.
I think there was five of us that connected on Facebook through Messenger and started talking about what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. And then once I put it on an invite on BearAware to the meeting, I think we now have 75 people either interested or going or between the two. So we'll see who shows up, but we turned into a bigger picture that I don't know everybody involved now.
This evening's meeting holds an excellent example of what Tucker means by the Borough Assembly's actions having a big impact on bears. An ordinance for introduction includes what's referred to as UMOT, which stands for Uniform Minor Offense Table. What it does is it allows the borough to set fines and fees for various infractions within the borough, essentially giving local ordinances some teeth. Tucker says that his group would like to ensure that fines are reasonable for things that lead to bear problems. Things such as not securing a dumpster or leaving garbage out that draws in bears. And that people who are attracting bears get fined.
If they implement that and don't have what's needed in it, it's not going to do much good.
You mean implement in terms of what's needed to keep the bears?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, right now it appears to be that they're going to implement pieces that they would be able to fine you if you didn't dispose of your garbage correctly at a dumpster. But I don't think they're going to be able to fine you if you don't take care of your garbage at your residence.
He says he'd like for people to offer suggestions for amendments or things to consider now so that the UMOT ordinance can incorporate residents' concerns before it is approved and becomes law at a future meeting.
And it just depends on what they add and subtract from this. And so if we can get in early and get our public comments in of what we think is needed to control this, it may end up with a better product than what they have written right now.
Tucker cited suggestions of his own and of those in his group on how the borough can help. For instance, getting data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game on whether a longer road system bear hunt would result in more bears taken and fewer around town. Set up programs to ensure new people to town understand the local bear population and how to behave if they encounter a bear. And 3, phase in some of the new bear-proof containers before the new waste management contract takes effect on July 1st. Possibly, he said, preventing some young bears from being habituated this summer.
I think if we do this right, we can not kill any bears next year.
For KMXT News, I'm Maggie Wall.
Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent Larry Ledoux presented an overview of the district's plan for dealing with infectious diseases in schools this week. Though odds of the coronavirus hitting Kodiak is remote, Ledoux, like many people and organizations who could be on the front lines if a pandemic occurs, says it's best to go through the paces to make sure everyone knows what to do and that all the systems work as expected.
The coronavirus is in the news and it seems to be spreading, and the World Health Organization has declared a worldwide emergency, so it seemed prudent, if you will, for me to review our pandemic preparations in case we ever have one here in the school.
Ledoux refers to his pandemic preparations as a quiet campaign, low-key and not intended to get anyone unduly concerned, because at this point there is no threat. But also at the same time, Ledoux wants parents and students to get the message to practice flu etiquette. Students will get a refresher training on good hygiene, basics designed to diminish the spread of any illness, such as frequent hand washing, always covering your mouth when coughing, and staying home if you're sick. He says parents can expect to hear more on the school's flu prevention plan.
Just to let them know that we're thinking about those kinds of things, should the case be necessary.
In the background, school officials are taking stock of emergency supplies and are reviewing how they'll educate 2,200 students if the schools needed to shut down for an extended period of time.
Just in case, not because I have any preconceived notion that it's going to happen, but again, you know, planning is a good thing for disaster management.
Ledoux's presentation suggested eating healthy foods and drinking plenty of water. It also suggests having a home supply of face masks, gloves, and disinfectant products. Regional ferry service will remain shut down at least until March. That's following news that the last mainline ferry is being towed to Ketchikan for inspection and repairs. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the only other ship available for relief has been laid up for budgetary reasons.
The Port of Bellingham's Marine Terminals Manager, Dave Warder, got an email from the Alaska Marine Highway System earlier in the day. He's in Juneau for Southeast Conference.
They just said the sailing's through February, so I'm not sure when the boat would actually. I don't think they know, but yeah, right now, so my staff in Bellingham's contacting all the customers that are traveling northbound. The ferry's been canceled through February.
Since the Matanuska broke down 2 weeks ago, some 20 passengers with vehicles have been camped in staterooms as engineers try to repair the ship docked in Juneau's Auk Bay. It was supposed to sail later this week. But Wednesday morning, travel agents and passengers alike heard about the change in plans.
We're getting calls from the terminals in Washington and here in Alaska about rescheduling of passengers that have bookings.
Dave Berg co-owns Viking Travel in Petersburg, which arranges tickets for passengers and freight on the Alaska Marine Highway System.
There's no other vessels that can take its place that they could put online quickly enough to make a difference.
So aside from the tiny Lituya, which shuttles between Ketchikan and Metlakatla, there's no other vessel in service. All are either being overhauled or tied up for budget reasons. One of those mainliners is the Malaspina. The state pulled her out of service in December. At the time, transportation officials said the 57-year-old vessel would soon need $16 million in steelwork. The decision to leave the Marine Highway System without a backup alarmed ferry workers.
We tried for a very long time to try and see what we could do to keep at least one vessel in some sort of ready reserve status.
Shannon Adamson heads the Alaska branch of Masters, Mates, and Pilots Union, which represents deck officers.
And due to budgetary issues, we were told that anything that is currently tied up down in Ketchikan is tied up for a specific reason, and they don't have the budget to be able to keep anything in a ready reserve status.
And she says the decision to further save money by not assigning a maintenance crew worried engineers. She says her union and the Maritime Engineers Beneficial Association, that's the engineers union, strongly recommended putting the ship in warm layup.
It is keeping the equipment on board, exercised and working, and keeping at least a few crew members on board to make sure something like this specifically didn't happen.
Something like this is damage from rainwater that burst through scuppers and flooded staterooms. There's concern that getting her back in service now could be even more complicated. Some lawmakers are concerned over the fate of the fleet. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman said Tuesday that the legislature never signed off on letting the Malaspina go.
That is a concern because the legislature hasn't stepped in with a policy call on what they feel is appropriate use of state funds and federal funds in refurbishing old ships versus buying new.
The ferry's budget was cut by $43 million last year, but Stedman says the budget compromised was with the understanding that vessels would be maintained and minimum service would persist through the winter.
We were expecting 285 weeks of service and service throughout the winter at a reduced rate, not no service.
No service. That's the reality until at least March, when the Matanuska is projected to have its engines repaired. Transportation officials say there just wasn't money to keep the Malaspina running as a backup. It's not just the steelwork that's a pressing need. State officials say she needs a complete repowering. The final bill could come to $41 million. That's based on recent experience.
Looking at what we just went through with the Matanuska, it went in for an 11-month overhaul, repower, and turned into 2 years and doubled the cost.
That's Transportation Commissioner John McKinnon.
The fear was that we would end up with the same thing on the Mal. So based on what we had in budget looking forward, the decision was to tie it up.
Stedman says it's the legislature that's tasked with deciding where the state's money goes and setting policy. He says he wants the agency to be more forthcoming.
If you're not told that there are substantial maintenance needs and they've been built up for years and you've been asking them about their maintenance levels and they've been saying that they're up to snuff and they're fine when they're not, we've got a discussion coming with Marine Highway and DOT.
He says he'll be holding hearings over the state of each vessel in the Alaska Marine Highway System. Meanwhile, travel agents like Dave Berg in Petersburg are handing out refunds as passengers and freight customers make other arrangements, if they can.
It's sorry news, for sure.
It's not immediately clear how many people are affected by the extended ferry shutdown. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Wildfires and Medicaid costs led state officials to ask the legislature to add the most money to the state budget than they have in at least 10 years. Nearly every year, the state government adds money to the current budget in what's known as the supplemental budget bill. This year, the request is for $260 million. Neil Steininger directs the State Office of Management and Budget. He described the bill.
The first part is to address items that have an urgent need for additional funding or are related to emergency response. So these are items where the cash needs of the program are, you know, such that we will run out of money to cover these programs in the near future.
The largest single item is $128 million for Medicaid. Officials in Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration say the state had to spend more than planned because many of the cuts weren't allowed under the federal Medicaid law. House Finance Committee co-chair Jennifer Johnston says the administration has learned that the state can't cut the Medicaid program without first reaching agreement with the federal government.
It's not one that we can cut our way out of. It's one that we have to negotiate with our partners and in particular the federal government.
The Medicaid cost could pressure the legislature to pass the bill by late March or early April. That's when the state expects to run out of Medicaid money until the new budget starts in July. Without the bill passing, healthcare providers wouldn't be paid until then. The second largest item is $110 million to suppress wildfires. The most noteworthy item that wasn't included in the budget was the more than $800 million that Dunleavy has said Alaskans are owed in permanent fund dividends. Every Alaskan would have received another $1,400 more last October if the state followed the formula in a 1982 law. But the legislature didn't fund the full amount. Lawmakers say larger dividends would harm the permanent fund and the state's economy. They haven't agreed on a new formula for dividends. In addition, the supplemental budget request includes money for the Alaska Marine Highway System, adult public assistance, and the Alaska Psychiatric Institute.
Support for KMXT's Midday Report is provided by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, featuring children's clothing from the Tea Collection, home spa items from Crabtree and Evelyn, and leather handbags by Dooney and Burke. Special orders of the Tea Collection clothing in your child's size always welcome at Artinger's. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Lots of winter fishing is underway or gearing up. More after this.
The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association is offering drill conductor training in Kodiak on February 28th and 29th. Sign on at amsea.org.
Winter sees a wide array of fisheries out on the water with more to come. Cod and a big mix kicked off the year in the Bering Sea and in many parts of the Gulf. Alaska pollock, the world's largest food fishery, opened on January 20th in the Bering Sea with a 3 billion pound harvest. Smaller pollock catches will come out of the Gulf and at Prince William Sound. Boats are targeting black rockfish in southeast and at Kodiak, Chignik, the Alaska Peninsula, and along the Aleutians. Lingcod also is open in southeast. Bering Sea crabbers are still out on the grounds pulling up snow crab. This season's catch was boosted to nearly 34 million pounds, a 24% increase. Kodiak's Tanner crab fishery is going slow. Tanner and Golden King crab fisheries open in southeast on February 17th. The golden quota of 41,000 pounds is down by about half. A Tanner crab fishery opens on March 1st at Prince William Sound. Southeast's shrimp trawl fishery closed on February 3rd around Petersburg and Wrangell with a catch of 400,000 pounds of pinks and side stripes. Shrimp trawling is Southeast's longest ongoing fishery since 1915, and it will reopen again in May. And if you didn't think, Alaska salmon fishing goes on nearly year-round. Over 100 Southeast trawlers are still out on the water fishing for winter kings. Halibut catches will be unveiled tomorrow at the International Pacific Halibut Commission meeting in Anchorage. You can tune in live online. Also on Friday, the State Board of Fisheries heads into a marathon meeting on Upper Cook Inlet fishing issues. More than 170 management proposals are on deck through February 19th at the Anchorage Egan Center. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to this noon edition of the Island Messenger. It's 31 degrees and overcast in Kodiak. Expect some rain this afternoon, continuing through tonight. Mostly cloudy with a low around 35 tonight and a 70% chance of precipitation. In Homer, it's 33 degrees and fair, and Anchorage also 33 degrees, just a few clouds out, a 20% chance of snow after 3 p.m. for Anchorage. Looking at the marine forecast from Marbot Island to Sikkanaak, there's a small craft advisory through Friday. Today, south winds of 25 knots with seas at 10 feet, and tonight, southeast winds of 25 knots with seas at 11 feet. Chiniak Bay today, southwest winds of 10 knots becoming south 20 knots in the afternoon, seas at 1 foot building to 3 feet in the afternoon. Marmot Bay today, south winds of 10 knots becoming southeast 15 knots in the afternoon, seas at 2 feet building to 4 feet in the afternoon. And tonight, southeast winds of 20 knots with seas at 7 feet with rain. Shelikov Strait today, southwest winds of 20 knots with seas at 4 feet, and tonight, east winds of 15 knots with seas at 5 feet. West of the Barren Islands, including Kamishak Bay, a small craft advisory on Friday. Today, west winds of 15 knots becoming southeast 15 knots in the late afternoon, seas at 4 feet, and tonight, southeast winds of 20 knots with seas at 5 feet and rain and snow showers. East of the Barren Islands, a small craft advisory through Friday. Today, northwest winds of 20 knots becoming south 15 knots late afternoon with seas at 9 feet. And tonight, southeast winds of 25 knots with seas at 9 feet again. Today is the 6th of February. Sunrise this morning was at 9:02 a.m. and sunset tonight will be at 5:47 p.m. That's 8 hours and 45 minutes of daylight, which is 4 minutes 35 seconds more than we got yesterday. The record high on this day was 48 degrees in 1982, and the record low was -1 in 1993. Looking at our tides for Kodiak, low tide will be coming out at 6:25 p.m., -0.43 feet. High tide will be in at 1:02 a.m., 6.79 feet. Just past high tide on the west side, it was at 12 noon, 17.62 feet. Low tide will be out at 6:48 p.m., -0.58 feet. And then high tide will be back at 1:24 a.m., 16.56 feet. Coming up this week on the Alaska Fisheries Report, the Alaska Legislature is in session and working on the budget. Fisheries programs across the state are on the chopping block, this after last year's major cuts to the Commercial Fisheries Division. Also, Kodiak's Representative Louise Stutes hopes the legislature will fix a measure approved previously that requires some fishing boat owners to double register their boats. The intent was to help local officials identify the owners of derelict vessels, but in practice, it's been a hassle and another expense for some boat owners. And lastly, here's an interesting idea, an electric fishing vessel. It's quiet, clean, and saves lots of money on the cost of fuel. We report on a Sitka fisherman who converted his boat himself. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, which is produced here at KMXT. You can listen to it on Thursdays at 9:17 a.m., Fridays at 5:20 during the evening news, and on Saturdays at 12:15 during the midday report. Some community announcements for you for today. Are you a boater, hiker, hunter, or fisherman? And do you own a GPS? If so, do you know how to use it? The Coast Guard Auxiliary can help. GPS for Mariners is a two-hour seminar course that will help you learn to navigate the world around you using modern GPS technology. While this course focuses on the equipment typically owned by the recreational boater, the material is useful for a variety of applications, including hiking, hunting, fishing, geocaching, and even driving in unfamiliar areas. If you own a handheld GPS unit, you are encouraged to bring it to class. Saturday, February 15th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Borough School District Central Services Conference Room F140. For more information, contact Lyle Refier, 654-4875, or L Refier, that's R-E-F-I-O-R, at gmail.com. AMC, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, is offering a fishing vessel drill conductor training in Kodiak on February 28th and 29th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center, 118 Trident Way. The cost for the class is $95 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. Interested mariners may register online at amc.org or call 907-747-3287. Instructor Art Schultz will cover cold water survival skills, EPIRBs, signal flares and mayday calls, man overboard recovery, firefighting, flooding and damage control, dewatering pumps, emergency suits and PFDs, helicopter rescue, life rafts, abandoned ship procedures, emergency drills, and in-water practice sessions. AMC's fishing vessel drill conductor workshops meet the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. The class is an excellent opportunity for fishermen and other mariners to gain hands-on training with marine safety equipment and learn best practices for surviving emergencies at sea. AMC is offering the class at a reduced cost to commercial fishermen thanks to support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program, and AMC members. So again, I think we might have lost it there, but the training is February 28th and 29th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Seafood and Marine Science Center on your island. Kodiak Maritime Museum is having an annual meeting on February 7th, that's tomorrow, from 6:30 to 9:30 at the Kodiak College. And that's all I have for you for today.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.